Welcome, everybody. This is the Pacifica Audit Committee for August 27th, 2013. My name is Fred Blair. I'm the chair of the committee. Margie Wilkinson is the secretary. Tonight, we're starting the committee meeting right now. I'm going to actually take the role since Margie doesn't have a roster. So, Carolyn Burden, are you present?
Yes, present.
Fred Blair is present. Jane Gatewood?
Present.
Donald Goldmacher?
He requested an excused absence.
I'm sorry. Thank you. Thank you, Margie. William Hairwagon? Okay. Nancy Henschel? Linda Beebe Dunn. Campbell Johnson.
Here.
Lizette King.
Yes, I'm here.
Good to hear you.
Thank you.
Okay. Janet Coburn.
Here.
Frank Lefebvre.
Here.
Hello.
And who is this?
Melissa Island Jones.
I'm sorry, who is this?
It's Melinda Island Jones.
Okay, I'm marking you as present. Okay, we're taking roll. Okay, Robert Mark is present.
Awesome.
Yes, I am.
Brenda Medina is present. Brenda Medina?
Yes, I'm present.
Lawrence Reyes?
Present.
Margie Wilkinson?
Present.
Okay, I'm... count as 4, 5, 7, 11, 12. We have 13 of our 15 members present. We have
a
quorum.
Did you get me, William Hairwagon?
Yes, I did, William.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you for being on this call. Well, everybody has gotten my draft agenda, and you know that this is an important meeting tonight. Because we're going to have, I found out just a week ago from Summer that the audit committee needs to vote on accepting the audit. A little noise on the line there. Somebody mute their phone if that's the case. The audit committee needs to vote tonight on accepting the audit before it can actually go to the CPB and we can get our money. We're going to do a couple of interviews tonight. Originally, we only anticipated having the auditor on the meeting tonight, but both Summer and Raul are coming on the line and are going to give us a report on the status of the audit and answer questions. I want to admonish people that tonight, because of the sensitivity of this issue, and we are going to go into executive session later in the meeting, and we'll determine the scheduling of that when we go over the agenda. But people cannot ask questions of on personnel issues, on contract issues, on proprietary confidential matters dealing with the with Pacifica. We are on an open public conference call at this point in time. I can't prevent people from asking questions of that nature, but you will have, when we go into executive session, you can ask all those questions you like and to your satisfaction at that time. But we can't go into those matters in public session. Okay, so I guess I'm trying to bring up my my agenda here. Okay, so
Janet Beck.
Okay, Janet, you want to ask your question?
I'm sorry.
You're going on the stack. I'm sorry. So we've called to order and we've done a roll call. I guess the next order of business is the agenda. Does anybody want to make modifications to the agenda at this point in time?
Janet.
Okay. Janet, you can speak.
Well, I'd like to suggest that item 10 be moved to between 6 and 7. If there are additional questions,
Tableau and stat.
Who was that for the stack?
Campbell.
So the question should come before we vote, I think, any of the questions. So I'd suggest moving item 10 up.
Okay. Is there any objection to moving item 10 to what?
Yes.
Is that Campbell?
Yes, it is.
Okay, Campbell, you have the floor.
Yes, these votes, I think it's important that they take place in open session. And this is the vote on approving the audit. And I think that that would be very disingenuous for us to go into a closed session to engage the audit. I think that if there are questions that are deemed to be sensitive, that with the IED, with Summer Reese on the call along with the auditor, they would bring up the sensitivity concern about it, and we can go into executive session to respond to that. But otherwise, voting on the approval is something that I think anybody who's on this call or who can access this information later on should be able to be party to. Also, I don't see any reason new business should be in closed session.
Okay, I'm putting myself on the stack, and then I will call Janet again. Well, Janet, why don't you, if you want to make a counter statement, why don't you make it now?
Well, it's just that if there are some concerns that could only be addressed in executive session, I would think it would not make sense to vote first and then have questions. So any questions that would need to be addressed in executive session should be before the vote, and then the vote should be in public session.
Okay, I'm putting myself on the stack temporarily. I've been talking to people today, and this very issue has been raised. The thinking was that we should have an executive session before the vote and then come back to public session. And one way of handling that is to make the actual vote in public session at time certain. So let's say
this is
7. Hello, Summer. We're having a little discussion about the agenda right now. One way of handling this is to have us come back to public session for the vote at a time certain, like, let's say, 7 p.m. And therefore, the public audience will know that we will be taking that vote and maybe having some public discussion before it at a fixed time. What do people think about that? Who was that?
Lawrence Speck.
Okay, Lawrence, you have the floor.
Yeah, Fred, I'd like to associate myself with Campbell's suggestion that, you know, those questions, you already set the parameters anyway in regards to, you know, what questions are going to be deemed kind of sensitive and not to be discussed or asked in public session. So I think it's more advantageous for us to be able to ask questions in public. And then if the IED or the auditor think, or the CFO think that these questions are too sensitive to answer in public session, then perhaps those could be put, those could be taken in bunch, and then those questions could be answered in executive session. But I think the questions should definitely come before the vote, and those questions that are deemed, you know, too sensitive to answer in public session, then they should go to executive session.
This is Margie for the stack. Hello? What? Fred, are you there?
I'm sorry.
Hello,
I put myself
here?
On mute.
Okay.
Margie, you have the floor. I'm sorry.
Thank you. I realize this is a complicated thing, but I absolutely agree that the vote has to be taken in public session, and so I'm wondering why we can't do what Fred suggested, which is if there are any questions which the CFO or the IED or the auditor deem to be questions that must be responded to in closed session, that we go into closed session with a time certain to go back into public session, so that our discussion and our vote on approving the audit takes place in public session, which I agree must happen. But I don't know how to deal with it if we don't allow for the possibility of a closed session.
Janet?
You have the floor, Janet.
So basically what Margie said is what I had suggested. I think the issue is whether questions, when the questions should be asked versus when the vote should be taken. So can we get all the questions asked? Everything in public session except whatever might need to be asked in executive session, and then after that, we have a discussion, and then we vote. I move that we do it in that order.
Okay. May I have a point of information, Janet? So you're saying that we can have some presentation in public, but we will spend most of our time in executive session going over the details of the audit.
No, that's not what I...
I'm sorry. Restate your motion again.
That all questions and discussion be held in public session, and the only part that would be in executive session would be those issues that would involve personnel and et cetera, legal. Those questions be addressed in executive session, and that's all in executive session. Everything else in public session. Before the vote.
Okay. At what point would we go into executive session then? After point six on the agenda here.
Yes, if there's a need, maybe there wouldn't be a need. But
well, we can try that. Is there any objections to Janet's motion?
Point of information, Mr. Chair.
Go ahead, Campbell.
Yes, I think that for people on the stream, it would perhaps be better for them if you were to identify the particular items on the agenda that are being affected and how they would be affected by this particular motion. And Janet's second statement of what her proposal was somewhat different from the first statement, which was just to move item 10 up to number 6. It became a little bit more complex on the second rendering, which is okay. But, you know, the thing is that I think it would be good for people in general to know what items are being affected and how they're being affected. Thank you.
Okay, well, I'll read the agenda here. Item 1 is, item 2 is the ED and the CFO will make a presentation on the 2012 budget. I put that for 15 minutes. Questions and answers by management to committee members, another 15 minutes. General discussion on audit. I think items 4 and 5 should really be reversed. Item 5 is introduction of Auditor Paul O'Grady to of Amenio McKinnitt to the committee. and public report on audit by auditor for 15 minutes, and then general discussion of audit for 15 minutes. That was, and then I have item six as questions and answers by auditor. Then item seven was discussion on the vote of approval, and item eight was voting on the approval, voting. The suggestion by Janet was to move item 10, which was the executive session, in between items six and seven. I mean, we can try and do most of this in public session and then retire to executive session for the for dealing with the questions that can't be dealt with in public. The thing is, I have no control on what questions people are going to ask, and so
Chair, Lawrence Stack.
Okay, Lawrence.
I understand that you have no control over the questions we may ask, but I think the parameters that you set down at the very beginning of the meeting with the boundaries that, that you set are, I think, sufficient enough for both the IED and the CFO and the auditor to be able to know when something is too sensitive or too proprietary to discuss in public.
Well, that leaves a lot. That leaves a lot of space open there. What I would suggest is that we modify item eight on the agenda, which is the voting on approval of the audit, to make that be a time certain at 7 p.m. this evening. So, because if we are in executive session, that makes us know that we have to return to public session at 7 p.m. And also the public will know that we will be restarting the stream at 7 p.m. for the actual vote and the actual discussion and vote on the approval of the budget. Do people accept that modification to the agenda?
Well, I do.
Does that include moving item 10 after number 6?
This is Brenda.
Yeah, make it 6 and a half.
Okay, I'm sorry. I should have asked.
Thank you, overlooked.
They object to that modification of item 6 on the agenda, making it time certain in public.
I think you overlooked my request to be on the stack after
Who's
Lawrence.
This
is Campbell.
Okay,
and
Campbell.
And I want to be on the stack. This is Brenda.
Okay, Campbell, you're on the stack.
Yes. Point I just was going to make is that in regard to any questions that would be of sensitivity whereby they should be handled in an executive session, I don't think that there would be a problem for the IED or the auditor to, you know, to bring up that concern. So, you know, I think that a question being asked doesn't necessarily engage whether it's responded to. Additionally, I think that there is a requirement, and I don't recall it being in the bylaws, but it may be in our CPB requirements to have our votes in public.
Brad, okay. This is Brenda. Can I be on the stack?
Yeah, you're next, Brenda.
Campbell.
You've got the floor, Brenda.
Oh, okay, so my I'm actually proposing a friendly amendment to your returning to public session for the vote. I would request 7:30 p.m. Pacific Standard Time, 10:30 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, just because we are already at 6 o'clock, and I feel the presentation may not allow for many questions. So I would actually prefer to be able to have people ask enough questions and have time for response.
Okay, I will actually accept that. Okay, is there any objection to us modifying point 8 on the agenda so that we return to public session at 7:30 p.m. for a discussion and vote on the approving the audit?
Without objection.
No objections? Okay, it's been modified. Okay, so is there any objection to the agenda as stated? Hearing none, we have an agenda. Okay, next time I had an agenda is approval of minutes from the 7/23 meeting. Well, I haven't received the minutes, so that's null and void. Okay, this is an announcement. Our next meeting of the audit committee will be Tuesday, September 24th of this year. And that's already posted on the KPFTX calendar, and people should note that. Okay, I think that takes care of the announcement of the next meeting. And again, the committee meets on the fourth Tuesday of every month. Okay, item two on the agenda. Summer and Raul, you have the floor to make a presentation on the budget. Summer and Raul, are you present?
I'm sorry, I'm here. I apologize. I'm working on three projects at once. Where are we at, Fred?
Okay, we're at item two on the agenda, which is a presentation by the CFO and ED on the 2012 budget.
Okay, well, I'm going to let the CFO go ahead and take the lead on this. This is his department. And I believe Paul is. Are you also on the call by now?
Yeah, Paul and Ben are here on the call.
Ben, okay, so I'm going to let the guys take the lead. Okay, Fred, I appreciate that. I'll jump in if it's necessary, but I'm going to hand it to Raul and to Paul. Okay, thank you.
I'll remind everybody that we are in public streaming at this point in time, so we are in public session.
Okay, good afternoon. Good evening. I just want to clarify, when you say 2012 budget, does that mean audit? Or I'm reporting on the audit, the 2012 audit.
I misspoke. Rule, I apologize. I misspoke. It's a 2012 audit.
Audit, okay. Okay, well, I have sent the draft of the financial statements with the audit report and some of the notes to the financial statements. There were just few changes or highlights to this year's audit report or audit process. I have indicated in my previous communication to the audit committee that two of the highlights were, number one, the opinion, the audit opinion on the draft shows that the auditor are rendering an unqualified opinion, meaning that compared to the previous years or the previous few years of the audits, we have been qualified in terms of the going concern issue. For 2012, that particular issue has been addressed, and we have communicated and worked with our current auditors, Armanino, that the previous year's audit, although we have substantial assets, the company will be able to sustain its operations in the next 12 months, as the opinion is good for a period of 12 months after the audit year. Hence, there's a compelling argument that...
Raul, that 12-month period is out of the balance sheet days.
Right.
Who's speaking?
Excuse me. This is Paul O'Grady, the one of the audit team.
Thank you.
Okay. So that's the one of the changes that you will see. And secondly, the listener support revenue is being netted off the premiums associated with the listener support in compliance with some CPB reporting guidelines. There were also some adjustments that were made coming from previous year's financial activities, and those were also reflected in this year's financial statements. It took a while to complete this audit. The Pacifica Foundation National Office, who had limited staff during the first 8 months of the fiscal year after the audit in question, the audit year in question, including myself, I joined the company about 8 months after the close of the year. So there's been a lot of difficulties in reconciling and all those records being updated into the year-end 2012 balances. So that's where we are right now. We have the audit, the draft of the audit report, and your feedback is welcome.
Yes, this is Paul O'Grady with Armenino. May I take the floor?
Go ahead, Paul. You have the floor.
Thank you. As Raul mentioned, we have conducted or completed the audit of the Pacifica Foundation for the year ended September 30th, 2012. Draft financial statements for that year have been issued to the audit committee for their review, and the audit committee has had those financial statements in hand for probably about a week or so, I believe. We did issue, as Raul mentioned, or are planning to issue, I guess, because we are still have not finally issued our opinion pending approval of the audit report. We did issue an unqualified opinion this year. As Raul mentioned, we did not include a going concern paragraph in the audit opinion this year. That decision was driven by our professional guidance with respect to the issuance of that type of opinion. And, the primary reason behind our decision not to issue a going concern opinion this year was twofold. Number one, the opinion or the auditor's evaluation with respect to going concern is from the balance sheet date to a period of 12 months subsequent to that date. And we are now close to the end of August. And so that 12-month period will end approximately 30-odd days from now, and we do not have any doubt or substantial doubt, should I say, with respect to the ability of the entity to remain a going concern and through that 12-month period from the balance sheet date. The organization also does have some assets that the entity feels they could liquidate if that were needed. My understanding is that there is no plan at this time to do that. But those are the two primary reasons that enter into our conclusion that going concern opinion paragraph could be removed. We did retain the liquidity footnote in the financial statements, which talks about the organization's liquidity and some of the challenges that accompany that. The organization reported a $1.2 million decrease in net assets for the year ended September 30th, 2012. I think, as Raul mentioned, there were certainly some challenges in conducting and completing the audit, which is evidenced by the fact that we are, late in issuing audited financial statements in the opinion for 2012. Those challenges, I think, were exasperated to some degree by some personnel resource constraints. There was quite a bit of turnover, I think, in the entity over the last several months. And as Raul mentioned, he has come on board in the last couple of months and has been a good addition to the staff in that respect. And we will, as part of our audit requirement, we are also required to issue some communications to those charged with governance, which in this case is the audit committee. We will be issuing those communications over the next week or so. And those communications cover a number of areas, one of which is communications with respect to the audit itself, our responsibilities as auditors, the organization's responsibility as auditee, the fact that an audit provides reasonable rather than absolute assurance with respect to the numbers, that we do work within what we call concepts of materiality. It will also communicate some of the more significant disclosures in the financials, the fact that a set of audited financial statements include certain estimates, and those estimates are subject to change in the future. It will include information with respect to whether there are any difficulties encountered in conducting the audit, and a number of other matters that we communicate as a matter of course under our professional standards for those charged with governance. We will also issue a communication on internal control that will include observations and recommendations with respect to internal control at the Pacifica Foundation. And with that, I will turn back to the floor.
And thank you, Paul. Fred, this is Summer, if I may now.
Summer, you have the floor.
Thank you. And this is just in general, not plotting over the same ground that have in terms of the lateness of the financial statements and the audit. I just want to stress to the audit committee the importance, unless there is any major concern, with hopefully approving this financial statement this evening, because our we've been in active communication with CPB. I was in communication with them this morning in terms of the release of our CPB funds. Everything is contingent upon our completed financial statements. So I just want to stress to the group the overall importance to the organization that we proceed apace now that we finally have an audited financial statement. So thank you.
Okay. Well, I guess this opens up the floor to questions.
Robert, Jack.
Okay, Robert, you have the floor.
Campbell for Stack.
Thank you, Campbell.
Lauren Stack.
Janet Stack.
Hey, Janet.
Lawrence, did you get me?
I got Lawrence. I got Janet. Anybody else?
William
Campbell. I'm sorry, Campbell. I've got Campbell.
William.
Brenda.
Brenda?
Yes. Thank you.
Okay. Robert, you have the floor.
Yeah, I just noticing on page 19 what I consider to be rather significant adjustments to prior periods. And I'm guessing that has to do with that CPB audit disputing our methodology for valuing premiums. But are there other significant transactions that caused those numbers to be so big?
I can take that. Raul, do you
go
want
ahead,
to?
Paul.
Paul,
you have the floor.
Thank you. There were a number of adjustments identified during the current year audit that applied to the prior year. and resulted in what we term as auditors' prior period adjustments. And those adjustments related to two areas primarily, one of which was accrued liabilities and certain accounts payable that were recorded as of the prior year end, for which there was insufficient evidence as of the time of our field work to validate those particular accruals. One of the primary challenges, or one of the primary reasons for that, was there were certain items that were recorded as accrued liabilities but also were recorded in the accounts payable system, and those items had not been relieved from the accrued liabilities of the entity and accordingly were still sitting in accrued liability accounts on the balance sheet, even though they had been cleared out through the accounts payable process. So, and what the organization elected to do, with our blessing, was to evaluate those accrued liability accounts as of September 30th, 2011, and of course 2012, but with respect to the prior period liability accounts, given the passage of significant time and the knowledge obtained in analyzing those particular accounts, the organization elected to evaluate and determine if each of those particular accruals were, in fact, accrued liabilities at September 30th, 2011. There were items that went both ways. Some of them were credits to the balance sheet. Some of them were debits to the balance sheet. But that was the primary, or one of the primary reasons for the accrued liability prior period adjustment. There was also an adjustment that was recorded to the prior period that impacted the organization's receivables, deferred revenue, and revenue for the. That really resulted from the existence of what are really intentions to give that arise out of.
Paul? Hello?
Interference? Oh, it's okay. It's gone away.
Yes. Go ahead, Paul.
Okay. There were adjustments to receivables and related deferred revenue and revenue that relate to the organization's revenue recognition methodology. The organization has historically recorded intentions to give, or pledges per se, as revenue at the time of the pledge. And the organization, in evaluating that policy and evaluating the accounting records at the organization and subsidiary records with respect to that policy, have elected and determined that those items represent intentions to give rather than unconditional promises or legally enforceable obligations, and that accordingly the recognition of revenue as that pledge money is received is a more appropriate methodology to utilize. As a result of that particular methodology or accounting methodology modification, and there was an adjustment recorded to essentially record the net impact of the change in the receivable to retained earnings over the two-year period. And then I think the final adjustment that occurred to the prior period was a deferred revenue amount that had been sitting, actually I believe it was a deferred rent amount, that had been sitting on the books for a number of years for which there was no support in the organization's accounting record for. So that was cleaned up also as part of the prior period adjustment. And I turn the floor back.
Okay, Paul, are you finished?
Yeah.
Campbell, you have the floor. You're the next on the stack.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair. The initial question, since the current assets are $1.3 million for the foundation, and its current liabilities are about $3 million, you're looking at, and I'm aware that there's been some discussion in professional circles, but the FASB has not come out with a, or had not, as of my last reading, come out with a determination on it. What you're looking at in terms of the going concern alert taking place is that, as opposed to this audit having been completed in February, and here we are in August, obviously the time has run, so we haven't been, a demand has not been made on the foundation that would put its going concern status at risk. Is that correct?
This is Paul. There are two points to be made on that. The first point, I think, as you correctly observed, the auditor's responsibility with to whether the entity has the ability to remain going.
Your voice is breaking up a bit.
Can you hear me?
Yeah, please.
Yes. Can you hear me better?
Yes, I can.
Okay. I think there are two issues. The first issue, of course, as you correctly pointed out, is that the auditor's responsibility with respect to going concern and the issuance of the going concern paragraph is related to the auditor's evaluation of the entity's ability to remain a going concern for a period of 12 months subsequent to the balance sheet date. Yes, given that we are within 30 days of that period, we have concluded that there is not a substantial doubt at this particular time that the entity will not meet that 12-month period. We have, however, included in the financial statements a footnote that discusses liquidity of the organization, and that footnote is included on page number 10 of the financial statements and does discuss the liquidity of the organization, some of the operating losses that the organization has incurred over the last number of years, management's measures and the organization's measures to address those issues, and certainly the fact that the organization's ability to address those measures in a positive manner significantly impacts the entity's long-term sustainability. The other thing that I would add to that is that, you know, on the comments with respect to you know, were we issuing these in February or January? Certainly, were we issuing these in January or February, management's plans with respect to our management's evaluation of the assets of the organization, and particularly and the assets that have inherent and built-in gains in the assets, such as real estate, we would have certainly evaluated those as part of that conclusion, because we would have been a lot further away from the 12-month period. So yes, you know, there you can certainly conclude from the balance sheet there are without a doubt liquidity issues. Current liabilities are exceed current assets. The organization reported a decrease in net assets for the year of approximately $1.2 million. And as a result, there are challenges with respect to the long-term sustainability, which are outlined in the liquidity footnote on page 10 of the financials. And that footnote is footnote number 3.
Okay. I have two other quick questions, but I'd like to follow up on the first one. When you're talking about the organization's ability, operations subsequent to the last audit, are you referring to the financial recovery plan that was adopted by the PNB?
No. I'm referring to what I was referring to, I think you had mentioned in, you know, were we sitting here 6 months earlier than now?
Oh, okay.
And you had asked, you know, what would our thoughts have been on the going concern issue? And my response is that, you know, the organization has liquidity challenges. It is reporting consistent decreases in net assets and has done for a number of years. It is in a net asset deficit position at the moment. The entity has certainly, based on discussions with management, it is working hard to streamline costs wherever it can, to expand revenue sources where it can. But there are significant liquidity challenges that need to be addressed in order for the organization to sustain itself over the long term.
Right. Okay, thank you. The second question is in regard to premium costs and changes that CPB has brought about. I didn't have opportunity to follow that through in terms of the audit, but are all of their adjustments going to be taken out of the current fiscal year, or can they be spread out?
Those adjustments, when you have an audit by an outside third party or a governmental entity, those adjustments would generally be recorded in the period those adjustments are identified, unless those adjustments were errors in a prior period, which at that point there would be an evaluation as to whether or not a prior period adjustment needed to be recorded.
But in either case, they would hit our current cash flow. I'm thinking about in terms of the impact on the foundation, if they could be spread out over future years, that would be, you know, more advantageous.
And I think that's, you know, there are two issues there. One of which is, you know, the pure accounting issue, which is the accounting for those adjustments. I think the more poignant issue, and based on your question, is a cash flow issue. You know,
right.
the accounting is the accounting, but the cash flow certainly is is to me the more poignant issue. I would defer to management and Summer on whether or not conversations with CPB or planned future conversations with CPB, will involve some sort of a proposal to address those particular items over a longer period. And I would hope that CPB would be receptive to that in those discussions.
Okay. The next next question, there's a comment I just wanted to make sure we had on the table, and that at WPFW there's $100,000 of a Leonard grant, and those are restricted to WPFW, and I just wanted to make sure that we had clarity on that. Those are not unrestricted. That's not an unrestricted grant. The question I guess I have, the last question that I have is in regard to internal control recommendations. Are you going to be assessing what's taken place in regard to the foundation's performance on internal control recommendations that were made previously? Or did you review the management letter, our recent management letters in that regard?
Yes, the answer to both of those questions is yes. There will be a communication provided to those charged with governance, which of course in this case is the Audit Committee, that will address the internal controls of the organization, our observations on those internal controls, and our observations on control recommendations that were provided in the prior period, and our observations with respect to the controls currently in place as they relate to those prior observations. So, yes, we will be looking or communicating on the control observations that were communicated in your prior audit, the control observations that we made during your current audit, and the recommendations that we have with respect to those control observations.
Okay. The very last point is, did you at all examine progress on the financial recovery plan as part of your audit?
We did not examine progress on the financial recovery plan as part of our 2012 audit.
Okay, thank you very much.
Raul or Summer, do you want to say anything at this point?
Sure, and I'm sorry, what was the specific question to CPB that Campbell had posed? Just the question, what is it exactly? Which aspect was that regarding evaluation? I'm sorry,
yeah,
Campbell,
yeah.
Just rephrase.
My question, let me just give that to you.
Thank you.
My question was that in regard to adjustments that CPB wanted to make pertaining to the premiums, if
yes,
they could be handled over a period of time, which Paul indicated is a cash flow issue rather than an accounting issue, a cash flow issue meaning that's something that we could probably negotiate with CPB on. As opposed to an accounting issue, which means you just have to correct the books.
Sure. So what's happening is CPB issued its final its audit, and its findings were that listener support had been overstated because premiums had been undervalued, and the action that they are taking is that they will deduct what they consider to be their overpayment during prior periods out of the upcoming dispersal. They've laid that out very clearly in their audit findings as to what those amounts are per signal area, and they will come out of the 2013 disbursement that would be coming up later this year and into the following year. So there isn't a higher authority to go to. They've made a decision that was their audit finding. They could be harsher than that, I believe, if they chose to be. I don't think they are looking at taking it out over time. I believe they're going to take it directly out of the next dispersal. of another concern regarding CPB funds, which is something I have been discussing with them at great length and providing, you know, infinite documentation in the hopes of mitigating this, is that one can be essentially fined or have your disbursement reduced because of how late the audit itself is, this audit that we're hoping to have approval on tonight. And that's because they have an internal funding cycle at CPB where they have to determine their allocations, and for that they need the financials of the various organizations to whom they are giving grants. And because ours is so late, it could affect our dispersal. I'm hoping that because of the circumstances of our books, et cetera, that they will show us some mercy there, and I do believe they're inclined in that direction. But that's actually something that's still up in the air as to what the final outcome may be. So that's what I'm working with them on. I don't believe we have a lot of movement in terms of them reducing our allocation in order to recover what they have determined to have been an overpayment in prior years.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Sure thing. Oh, and I wanted to address, Campbell, what you had said about the building fund. It is listed on page 11 of the draft financials. It does list the PFW building fund separately and as a restricted fund. Okay?
Okay.
This is Jane Gatewood. I'd also like to get on this
one. I'm sorry, Jane.
Thank
you
very
much.
Thank you.
Jane, did you hear me, Lizette?
No, I didn't hear you, Jane. What did you say?
No, Lizette.
Lizette and Jane, both of us would like to be added to your slot.
Okay. I want to remind committee members that I let Campbell ask us three questions. I think I'm going to limit people to one question at a time. We can come back. But I want to get everybody to be able to ask questions. So, Lawrence, you're next.
Thank you. I was on mute there. So I have two questions that roll into one, so I won't follow up or anything like that. But the first question I had was, I heard about liquidation, and when I hear liquidation, I start to get concerned. And perhaps he could alleviate my concerns. How realistic is the liquidation option? And the second one for our IED was, how much are we anticipating from CPB funding? For the if you could give us a total, if you have it, or if not, an estimate.
Sure, I can answer both of those questions, Lawrence. Thank you. Okay, so let me be clear on liquidation. The auditors are conducting a financial audit, and there is a huge gap between what is possible in the business world and what is desirable or likely to occur. They're able to take the going concern off of there because, in reality, we do own 5 radio stations with licenses which are significant assets, and we own 3 buildings which are significant assets, and we have various funds that are attached to specific units. So in reality, our debts are much, much smaller than our assets. So if we were forced to, because someone took some untoward legal action or something, we are not in a position where we would go out of business as an entity because of an inability to pay our debts. Our assets far exceed our debts by tens of millions of dollars, hundreds of millions of dollars if you were to aggregate all of the license values. So from a financial reporting perspective, it is obvious that we could liquidate a building, God forbid, or whatever, and pay off these debts. So they're able to take the going concern off of there because we don't have $3 million worth of debts and only $3 million worth of assets. We have $3 million worth of debts and a couple hundred million dollars worth of assets. And so I did want to make sure that no one got frightened and thinking that liquidating an asset is something that anyone is planning on doing or looking at. Obviously, we know we're having a great deal of trouble on the East Coast, and that causes all sorts of things to enter the conversation, but there is no the two are not tied together. The fact that the auditors are able to remove the going concern does not indicate that anyone is planning to liquidate an asset in order to satisfy those debts. So I hope that helps some to clarify that. In terms of the CPB money that we are currently waiting for, which is the second half of last year's disbursement cycle, so this does not relate to the next disbursement cycle from which deductions will be made relative to that prior audit. This is the money that we are currently waiting on that has not been released, that was spoken of in the press. This is the aggregate of both restricted and unrestricted. I have the numbers for each, but I'm going to put them together. KPFA, it's 66,000, and I'm roughing these off. KPFK, just a tick under 72,000. PFW, 66,000 and a little change. WBAI, 90,000 and a little change. And KPFT, 54,000 and a little over. Okay, so those are the approximate numbers. And those are broken into restricted and unrestricted. So none of these amounts are huge, and that is because the CPB front-loaded the disbursement for this prior year, giving us the majority of the disbursement in December when we got our first round of CPB funds. That was a determination made by CPB, not by us. So this second installment is significantly smaller than the first one and is not in having any deductions made for those findings regarding overstatement of listener support and undervaluation of premiums. Okay?
Janet, you're next on the stack.
Okay. Forgive me. I'm new to this process, so I'm not sure if this is an appropriate question, but I'm wondering whether there were recommendations for changes to internal controls at the stations. I know this is an audit for the for Pacifica, but what about how the individual stations might need to change their controls? And can I just throw this real quick question in? When would we expect the second installment, the latest?
I'm sorry, the second installment? I can address that, and then Paul can take the internal controls. The amounts that I just gave you, CPB and I have been in communication as of this morning. We've been working very closely together. God willing, I anticipate that as soon as this audit committee approves the audit and we finish paying for it this week and the auditors give us a final complete audit, then we'll go to work on filing the AFRs, which are the reports required by the CPB, the financial reports. And I am hopeful that shortly thereafter they will release our funds. In December, the various forms that had to be filed in December, it's my recollection that they process the funds within about a week electronically. And obviously this will be very helpful to the organization. Even though it's not a large amount of money, it will still be very helpful for the stations and also for FSRN, which is awaiting the restricted portion of these funds. So it should be very shortly is the answer, hopefully within 2 weeks, I hope. And then, Paul, if you want to address the internal controls at the station level, to the extent you can.